The Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise ones from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called for the wise ones and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out. And there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you.
Yesterday, January 6th, was the Feast of Epiphany. For many Protestant traditions, the season of Epiphany begins January 6th and runs until the season of Lent begins on Ash Wednesday. The word Epiphany comes from a Greek word that means the shining forth or manifestation of God's glory in human form at the birth of Christ. There is a theme of light, and there are many references to light as a symbol, like a light that shines in the darkness or a light that reveals. The season of Advent was when we were waiting for and anticipating the coming of the light. During Christmas, we joyfully celebrated the coming of that light in the birth of Jesus. The light of Christ made manifest to the whole world by the Gentile Magi from the East is the culmination of this theme of light. There is this magical period of time that exists in the world of photography known as golden hour. I didn't learn of this magical hour until I took up photography as a hobby in high school and college. Golden hour is the time right after sunrise or just before sunset. The term hour is relative. Golden hour can be just a few short minutes or up to half an hour, depending on your location, the season, and the weather. During golden hour, the light from the sun refracts in the atmosphere, casting a warm golden hue on the earth. The light is literally golden. Because of the angle of the sun, only the warm yellow spectrum rays are visible. The light is dispersed everywhere. Because of the angle, the light has to refract through more of the atmosphere than it does during any other time of day. What we experience is a warm glow that transforms everything we see. Photographers love the warm light that is produced during golden hour because the light is softer, warmer, and the shadows are less dark. The highlights are less bright. During the golden hour, the ordinary becomes breathtaking, the plain becomes beautiful, the mundane heavenly. We were driving up to Anchorage at the end of December, right when the cold snap hit. It was minus 13 in Kenai the morning we left. Bright, feathery crystals of hoarfrost covered everything, outlining and pronouncing every twig on every branch of every tree. The sky was clear and the sun shone brightly. Golden hour occurred as we were driving through the pass. Suddenly, the white, crystal-covered trees were illuminated with intense golden light, causing them to sparkle and shine in every direction. It was breathtaking. In the text this morning from Isaiah chapter 60, the people of Zion are being told to arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Before delving into Isaiah chapter 60, we need to back up a bit and take a look at what events led up to this passage. In a nutshell, the Jewish people faced exile from Israel and were forced to live in Babylon for about 70 years. At this time, the capital, Jerusalem, and the beautiful temple Solomon had built were all destroyed. The Israelites' captivity lasted until they were freed by Persian leader Cyrus the Great. The Israelites returned to Jerusalem to rebuild their temple, but were greeted with ruin, decay, and corruption. And then God commanded Zion to arise, which means God was telling the people of Zion to get up or to stand. Eugene Peterson translates as arise as, "Get out of bed, Jerusalem." It isn't always easy to arise and get out of bed in the morning. I'm actually a morning person who loves the solitude that comes with being the only one awake in the early morning, so I can't really relate. However, I often have to coax and entice Liam out of bed before school in the mornings, lest he let out a long groan and throw the covers back over his head. I usually say something along the lines of, "Time to get up. It's pizza for lunch today. Time to wake up. You have Battle of the Books today." Or the magical words, "Snow day." Thankfully, enticing morning salutations are usually followed by Liam throwing off his covers, leaping out of his loft bed, and landing with a large thud on the floor so he can quickly get dressed for school. Jumping up and leaping out of bed are not at all how I imagine the Israelites answering God's call to arise. Rather, I see them getting up slowly, with bodies stiff and sore, cricks in their necks, possibly even lots of bedhead. Some of them pull the covers back over their heads. There is definitely loud groaning and yawning while they help one another up and rub the sleep from their eyes. They wish someone would put on a pot of coffee. I imagine they are dubious of the promises God has made and is enticing them with after they have spent several decades dwelling in the deep darkness of exile. They are weary, broken, and exhausted. "Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness is the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you." Something kept drawing and pulling me to the darkness in verse 2. As Alaskans, darkness is not a foreign concept to us. We are at the point in winter where we get up and it's dark. We drive to school and work in the dark. We come home from school and work in the dark. Winters in Alaska are just plain dark. The weeks between Christmas and mid-January are particularly dark weeks for me as we approach the birthday of our second child, Elias, who was born sleeping on January 12th. I think that if we are to comprehend the weight of God's promises to Israel, we must first sit with the darkness. The thick darkness in Isaiah is not just the darkness of night. Thick darkness is darkness where you can't see a thing, not even your own hand in front of your face. Thick darkness is substantial, heavy, dense, opaque, and impenetrable. We don't have to do much to see this thick, deep darkness around us. The evening news reports of death and illness, poverty and inequity, loss, despair, and injustice all seem inevitable. Thick, deep darkness can also sound like, "Do better, be better, work harder, be the best, be perfect," or, "I'm not worthy, I'm not strong enough, life is too hard." Comparing ourselves to others, trying to meet others' expectations, or our own unrealistic expectations, focusing on our failures and our own self-loathing are all ways in which we experience deep darkness, where we can't see a way out, where we are too weary or broken to lift our heads and to even try to hope. "For the darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you." I don't know about you, but hearing from Isaiah about God speaking into darkness and bringing forth light took me back to a certain beginning. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. I don't find it coincidental that Isaiah subtly echoes Genesis 1 in chapter 60 of Isaiah. I believe that Isaiah is reminding Zion and us that God was hovering over the deep darkness at the beginning of time, and God is still present in the deep darkness today. God alone separates the light from the darkness. God alone brings light out of darkness. There will be times when we come to our own darkness in our life, when we feel like our world is falling apart from sadness, grief, or despair. We may come to the point where we feel like there is nothing we have or there is nothing that we can do that matters. Everything may seem pointless. This is when we need to look to love. I put in a disclaimer. I am not saying that we need to deny pain and suffering or pretend that everything is okay. I have been in deep, dark places in my life where it seemed as if everything was pointless and that God had given me more than what I could bear. I couldn't just shake off those feelings, change my circumstances, or flip a switch and decide to eagerly rise and shine the next day. What I am saying is that without denying our pain, without pretending that we believe everything will be okay, we can look to God's love. God's light penetrates the deep darkness, and God is there with us. Sometimes this light may be in the form of the flicker of a small candle instead of the blinding light of the sun. Even the tiniest bit of light can dispel a room full of darkness. Sometimes that may be all that we need. There may be times when we don't need light that obliterates the darkness. Rather, we may simply need to see and know that the light is there, that God enters into the darkness to sit beside us. Arise, shine, for your light has come and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. After arising, God commands Zion to shine. When you look up the word shine in the dictionary, you get a couple of definitions. The first one being, of the sun or another source of light, to give out bright light. Seeing as we, as humans, are not capable of glowing or giving off light, I will move on to the second definition. Be bright with reflected light. Reflected light. Our light is derivative. We get it from God. We are not the light. We do not originate the light. We simply reflect the light. God is not commanding the people of Zion, or you or me, to stand up, dust ourselves off, and start putting our lives back together so that we can start achieving and shining on our own. God is commanding them and us to arise and to look to love, the source of all light, so that by God's grace, our faces may be a reflection of God's light. And to do this, we have to choose to surround ourselves with light. I'm reminded of what Paul says in Philippians 4, verse 8. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. If we point our gaze toward the light of love, then the way we live our lives will reflect it. I believe that Henry Nouwen explains it well. People who have come to know the joy of God do not deny the darkness, but they choose not to live in it. They claim that the light that shines in the darkness can be trusted more than the darkness itself, and that a little bit of light can dispel a lot of darkness. They point each other to flashes of light here and there, and remind each other that they reveal the hidden but real presence of God. They discover that there are people who heal each other's wounds, forgive each other's offenses, share their possessions, foster the spirit of community, celebrate the gifts they have received, and live in constant anticipation of the full manifestation of God's glory. No matter how thick the darkness, no matter what is separating you from God, the light of God will dawn. Through God's grace, it will shine upon you and then within you. Light illuminates our hearts to understand not only the depth of our sin, but also the completed saving work of Jesus for us. The burning light of a star shining in darkness brought the Magi to Christ, the source of light, and they shone radiant. We get to shine with the radiance of redemption, with the brightness of the risen Christ on our face. Then, like those frost-covered trees in Turnagain Pass during golden hour, we will be breathtaking. During Advent, we were waiting for the light. Christmas proclaimed the presence of the light. Epiphany calls us to spread the light on the journey. Perhaps we should pause on our journey and begin this new year by looking inward and asking ourselves, how do I reflect the light and the glory of God's grace? How can I be an epiphany of God's coming into the darkness?